In this week, on the 15th of March, 2017, making their inaugural visit to King's Meadow, a certain team from Buckinghamshire were well beaten on a night where the sheer intensity of the crowd played a significant part in the Dons' victory. After a tense first half, Jake Reeves struck just after the hour before Lyle Taylor added a quick-fire second goal to record AFC Wimbledon's first league victory over their so-called rivals. It means a lot more than just 3 points, Neil Ardley said afterwards. Of course, we know it means a lot more than that, but we don't discuss them very much. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go.
Good evening, and welcome to the Same Old Wombles. We are almost episode 150. I'm waiting for our wonderful wizard, Dr. Proctor, to tell me exactly which episode will be 150, but it's coming up soon. But as you may well have noticed, first and foremost, my name is Mark Lewis, and you don't hear the dulcet tones of Mr. Matthew Cooper. Unfortunately, Matthew is unable to join us this evening. So, felicitations to him, and he'll be back next week, hopefully. But we are joined by two of our three regulars. First and foremost, not my brother, obviously, because he knows nothing about football whatsoever. But we are indeed joined by Mr. Niall Cooper. Good evening, Niall.
Good evening, Mark. Nice to have you as a special host for this
Special
evening's show.
host, yes. Well, long-term listeners to the pod will remember that I used to indeed host everything and start with a pop song reference, but then Adam just got rather frustrated by not ever getting any of the pop song references, so we had to stop that. But I figured for once we'd actually introduce you not as the particular person that you may be or particular organisation that you may be head of, but I'm sure we can squeeze some time in to talk about that and the ongoing conference. And the man whose laugh you've just heard, wearing, dear listener, a particularly fetching Doctor Who style scarf and an old school retro yellow and blue. The proper yellow and blue. It's actually an AFC Wimbledon scarf. He's now pointing it out to me. It is indeed Dr. Adam Proctor, head of the department, particularly overworked and underpaid, the hardest working person in showbiz, or at least in academia. Dr. Proctor, good evening, Adam. How are you?
Oh, that's very kind of you, Mark. Thank you. Hopefully, my boss is listening to this and he'll give me a rise, but I doubt it. I don't think
You
he's that
just get
interested.
promoted recently. I mean,
Yeah,
surely you got a rise then, but
I yes, that's true.
that's
That's true.
I would hope so anyway.
I did. Yes, one
Otherwise,
of
your sales negotiations aren't very good.
there's well, yeah, there's many. Let's just say no one really wants needs to know this on this podcast, but let's just say in academia, there's lots of ways you can get promoted that don't include getting any additional cash. And I thankfully have just done one that does involve getting a bit of additional cash for the time that I am head of department, which is nice. It's not a ton of money, but it's a little bit more than I had last year.
Glad to hear that. I mean, and sadly, as we were just discussing before we started recording, those of us who either work in academia or may have children or family who work in academia or studying in academia right now are well aware, obviously, that universities are strapped for cash and the opportunities there for the next generation are perhaps slightly limited. However, this is a football podcast, so let's cheer ourselves up by actually, first of all, because obviously we recorded last week before the Blackpool game. And the lovely thing about I have about sourcing content from away fans when we beat them is that they then tend to go particularly quiet after the game and just are rather miserable about how particularly inept they are. But yeah, a 4-1 win. And I'd love to come to Adam to ask him something about it, but I'm fearing he might not be able to tell us very much. So Niall, who was actually sitting next to me at the game, what was your take on that win last Wednesday, that random day for a football match?
Oh no, it was very nice, wasn't it? It was lovely. I mean, I think we were not as good as we were on the Saturday before when we were awesome during the entire first half. We were kind of like solid, and then in the most unusual of circumstances, we decided to do what everybody else needs to do against us, which scored twice in injury time at the end of the match. And that was just, honestly, the relief when the third one went in, it was just palpable. And then obviously scoring the fourth, you know, which was obviously a fantastically brilliant overhead kick from 30 yards for those who missed it. And in no way was it like, but in Adam Proctor's world, because it obviously was Omar, therefore that's clearly what it was in his brain. For the rest of us, we might have thought that somehow or another the ball hit Omar, who was on the goal line, and it went in. But let's, by the by, let's call it a 30-yard overhead kick for the sake of Adam. No, it was glorious. It was really, really, really nice. I think it was a good way of kind of winning, grinding out a game, and you know, three wins in a row at home. So that's getting quite nice. So yeah, I thought we played well. Good performances. Would I kind of look forward to the moment when we have got Tilly back in the team. I think we've definitely still missed him. And those who watched a bit of Saturday will know that as well, that that's the kind of little extra spark. You know, I was always worried about Tilly coming back in. I didn't think he would get up to speed quite quickly. And I also had this kind of, he left and therefore he had a lot to prove in my mind. And my God, has he done it in spades. You know, people are talking around us of Tilly being in the mix for a player of the year already, which is a bit ridiculous in my opinion. But, you know, no doubt he's made a difference. And I think, you know, we looked at that, the 1-0 win, when we were brilliant with Tilly and he goes off injured and we noticeably sort of dropped a bit. So, you know, hopefully he's back on Saturday. I don't think he is, but, you know, that's the sort of thing that we need back. I don't think he's making Tuesday's game. For those of you, it's probably Tuesday when this goes out. I'll stop talking. That was a
No,
little waffling from me, wasn't it?
no, it's good. Obviously, yeah, I had spent 2 days in London. Obviously, I don't live in London, so, and the second day I was taking some students around to a game studio, which was great. So I was toying with going to the match, but then I found out there's replacement buses on the Wednesday, and so I knew from previous experience that these seem to run over quite a long time, and that I would be running back to the train station, which I, well, I don't do any running, and so that would be bad, basically. I mean, for lots of reasons, and so I decided I'd just go home. And actually, it was quite funny because I was shattered, and basically at the start of the kickoff, I just messaged the guys and said, I'm actually just getting into bed. But then I didn't obviously go to sleep. I was following on the wonderful WhatsApp group that we have. And I just want one question I did have though is did Omar come on as a sub for that game?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
Yeah, he did.
interesting. And he scored. Excellent. I think that
Oh,
gives him
I
a
see.
look.
So Adam Proctor is now putting it out there after Matt flagging our awards about the most impactful sub. I don't genuinely think that, with the greatest of respect to the president of the Omar Bugle fan club, that coming on as a sub for the last 15 minutes or so of the game and being in the position when a ricochet across the box happened to hit you on the inside of the thigh when you're on the goal line
Look, one hit him on the head the other week, one
counts.
hits him and it goes in. It doesn't matter where the ball touches him, it just goes in the goal. Like, he's like gold, basically.
Yeah, I think there's a slight difference between that type of impact and the impact of it's nil-nil, we're fighting for a goal, we need a goal to be able to win the game to stay up type thing.
Okay, he might do that next game.
Oh, let's hope that we're not in a fighting to stay up sort of scenario, Adam. I'm kind of like,
That's
let's see
true.
this as a
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. That graph that Mark has shared a few times, I don't know where it comes from, but of predicted places and where you might end up, it's definitely we are moving towards the playoff line rather than the relegation graph line, which is great.
So I think though that we need to average over 2 points a game to hit it, and that is normally what you would call championship winning form. It's basically where we've got to get onto.
You're talking
But
about PPG profit on social media,
yeah.
and to actually answer Niall's question, we are in fact averaging 2 points a game over the last 5 games, and we're up there. Lincoln have won all 5 games, but the only other team that have actually got 10 out of 15 points, so averaging 2 points a game, would be Plymouth Argyle. Everybody else is lower than that, and then you've got, you know, the likes of Well, we know who the, who the so to speak, people who are circling the drain are. Northampton Town, 0.2. Exeter, who I believe I flagged up about 3 weeks ago as the team dropping like a stone, 0.2 points, so 1 point in the last five games, literally. And Blackpool, who really were quite abject, I thought. I actually think Blackpool were worse than Northampton, although the 4-1 did flatter us. But again, Blackpool, 0.4 points per game over the last five games as well. So that's only 2 points per game. Not really of any particular significance. But clearly, that's why Lincoln are where they are. And they look like they're going to take the title above Cardiff, actually. But actually, what I find interesting, which Niall needs to comment on, is what reactions, what visible reactions people have when it's announced when you're 2-1 up and not particularly confident and not playing particularly well after a very abject goal that Bauer just allowed to happen. How you feel when 7 minutes in injury time is announced? Because I believe, Niall, you were slightly more concerned than I was.
I don't think that dwells quite as much as it does on my brother, who was massively concerned. I mean, I was concerned, don't get me wrong, because I'm still scarred by, I believe, Salford City from the other season and other things like that, where you kind of go, right, please let this not happen, because I've seen it too often. So yeah, I'm not a fan of when you are 2-1 up and the person puts seven things up and you're kind of, the momentum's not been going your way. But we got those two goals, so like it was a bit of gloriousness that I'm happy about. I'm happy about, but yeah, on behalf of my brother, absolutely is. Yeah, me and Matt do anxiety to a high level, and that was definitely one of those.
No, I certainly
Talking.
saw the 7 minutes on the BBC. I was like, oh, sugar, this is not good.
You see, Adam, your impact is actually on games and on our little group, even if you're not there. Because we got to about 60 minutes into the game, and there was, of course, no one warming up, and the opposition were bringing subs on. At which point, Matt said, "You know what Adam's going to say right now, don't you? We need some subs." And yes, the subs did, in fact, make their impact. But perhaps no disrespect to Nelson, who made a great run out of midfield and rounded the keeper for the third. But the best bit about that was our management team were pushing us on to press during injury time. But most significantly, their right back had just gone down with a cramp. At which point, they decided to pass the ball square across their back four to the right back, who had no interest whatsoever in getting the ball. Didn't get the ball. Nelson got the ball, and that was it. Game over. But of course, now having checked out a few Blackpool fan sites to get an article from them, they are pretty despondent, and it would appear. Because Port Vale are kind of flirting with a little bit of a renaissance, but they were so far behind. But it would, generally speaking, appear that both Blackpool and Northampton are on the slide and already well behind, and then goal difference is well behind, as obviously are Port Vale, another 10 points or so or more behind them as well. So it's probably far too presumptuous to say this, but I'm going to anyway. With fewer than 10 games left of the season, actually, it may well be a situation whereby three out of the four teams are in the bottom four, are that will be in the bottom four, that will finish in the bottom four in League One, are already there. And if so, then that's not really necessarily going to upset us, because obviously we are, I believe, 11 points clear, even though we obviously weren't able to get anything out of Stevenage.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Stevenage was a bit of a damp squib on the back of it, back of where we've been at. And we need that. Such a thing. We need a bit of Tilly. We probably need to look at a bit of rotating again. I mean, I know Lewis gave away the penalty, but I quite like having Lewis back in the team. But it's interesting when you've got that kind of the difference to what Lewis and Bauer brings. So Bauer's obviously one to deal with the kind of when we're facing a team that's going to lump it. Bauer's obviously good in the air, but Lewis obviously reads the game better, apart from when he gives away penalties. But that for me is a positive sign. I think the work rate of Maycock and Smith You know, that combo that we've got in the middle of the part now looks really quite strong. You know, I quite like that energy that we've got there. And also remembering that we're not seeing Reeves. Like we never would have. What gets me is particularly when we're looking at that, the one that we have in Northampton, when you looked at the bench and you were going, I was going, right, well, that's four of the five, four players there would have been absolutely slap bang first choice 11 at the start of the season. You know, no doubt about it. So it's just really interesting to see how we've evolved. I think that's really promising as well. You know, and well done to Johnny to turn some of those players that were we wouldn't have thought being like that to be, you know, good enough to be in a starting 11.
The interesting thing for me is the midfield three clearly is the engine room, so to speak, and Smith playing that much further forward with as the holding midfield player, but still playing that much further forward than Reeves did, has obviously engineered this. Likewise, the legs that Hippolyte and
Michael, yeah.
Callum Makok have managed in the last few games have clearly made a big difference. Can they keep that going? I don't know necessarily. I mean, it was great to see Nelson just for a few minutes, and he was clearly absolutely chuffed to be able to make a small impact, and he hasn't really had any kind of proper opportunity to make an impact in the time that he's been alone since. I agree with you on the rotation thing you just mentioned, Niall. I think, you know, we play midweek, Saturday, Sunday, and so on and so forth. We've got Leighton Orient now obviously coming up. We're recording on Monday, so Leighton Orient is tomorrow night. Then we've got Peterborough fairly quickly on Saturday. Then we don't have midweek games for a couple of weeks. And then obviously we're going into Easter when we've got Luton and Lincoln, which are two pretty tough games. And then again, we'll have a midweek game, Stockport and Plymouth in short order in kind of mid-April. So I don't see that we're going to be able to get through with the same 11 or 12 in the next few weeks. I think Stevens and Brown have both done particularly well after that little analysis we did a few weeks ago. However, I do think, without wanting to just pander to Adam, I do think that possibly it's sensible now to give Omar a run out from the start. Certainly, a game like Stevenage, I think, would have been wise to do that as well, because Stevenage is just one of those really dull type fixtures where they don't let many goals in, and when you get a scrappy challenge giving us a penalty, as we did against us early on, you know, you're struggling to see, are we actually getting any shots on target? Are they just, I mean, I think we had seven or eight corners, but against Stevenage of all people, that really seemed quite pointless because it's a bit of a land of the giants scenario. I mean, looking at the table here, Stevenage in 36 games have only scored 40 goals, but equally, they've only conceded 37 goals. So to have a plus three goal difference and yet still be in fifth position in the playoff zone, you know, with four wins out of the last six. That's really almost a kind of Wimbledon of last season type approach, really, to be able to just be so solid that if you get ahead, you're going to stay ahead. I much rather would, however, watch Wimbledon with the type of form we've had recently, where we haven't been keeping clean sheets, but we have been looking like we will create chances.
I think a lot of that's Tilly, isn't it? You know, definitely. And Brown, I mean, Marcus Brown's a different player, isn't he? You know, I just think that when you look at those two, it's just a real kind of like two new signings. And I really mean that with Marcus Brown, which I just wanted to have to bring on to that conversation because I was having a chat with Matt about this. But like, who the hell's in the mix for Player of the Year? You know, now that we looked at it, because a few months ago, Steve Seddon would have been talked about all the time. But now, is it Tilly? Is it Brown? You know, who else is in the mix in that?
I think it's positive that there are a few players in the mix. I mean, I think it would be unfair on Johnson not to include him
Yeah,
in the running as
Johnson's
well,
a good point.
because he's won all those games through the winter when we just couldn't buy a goal and we were eking out nil-nils, you know, against your Mansfields and the Stevenage home game and so on around December, Christmas time. Johnson was an absolute rock there, and that was obviously a period of time when Lewis was in and out of the team and then Bauer came into the team. And without Lewis, as you say, Niall, we haven't necessarily got too much in the way of pace. The other person, I think, which who gets completely overlooked and underappreciated is Oggs. Of someone somewhere, I believe, probably Planet My Numbers on social media, has done some analysis of both the ages of the current first team squad, but also the number of minutes played. And Smith has played something ridiculous, like 98% of all minutes. But Oggs is pretty close to that as well. He's about 95, I think. He's just one of those players that doesn't seem to get fatigued, doesn't seem to pick up too many knocks and injuries, doesn't seem to let the team down. I mean, can anyone remember the last time Oggs made a mistake that resulted in a goal, let alone, in us losing a game?
And he's our youngest first team player, is that right?
I think probably it's Simwe at the moment in terms of overall. Obviously, Simwe is a loanee. But yes, I think he's certainly our youngest in terms of our actual
A non-loan player, because
long
obviously
term.
Nelson's young as well.
Yeah, I mean, Nelson's young, and probably you find that Nkeng is the youngest of the lot. Oggs is one of those that he's been around for so long. He's probably only about 23, 24 without checking it out on Wikipedia. But he feels like he's been around for
Well, that's it.
quite
That's
a
what I was
while.
thinking, because I was just surprised at how young he was. I was like, okay, man, he's been around for ages. But of course, he's obviously started much younger.
But then for those of us now in our 50s, you see someone like Max Dowan of Arsenal, who apparently has been in the Arsenal Academy since he was 5 and he's still only 16 and just scored in his debut in the Premier League, which is like, hey, good luck to him, because you've got a classic example in someone like Jack Wilshere as to someone who came through, clearly had a lot of talent, but unfortunately with injuries and fatigue and recovery and so on, didn't quite actually hit the total star levels for a considerable period of time that he wanted to. But Asimwe was one I wanted to ask you guys about, actually, because he has got his chance again because Tilly is injured. Niall's right, after Tilly went off injured, and it doesn't sound like he's going to be back anytime soon, unfortunately. Asimwe came in, but Asimwe, again, did make a very good last-ditch tackle against Blackpool at 2-1, which ultimately was a match-changing challenge, which prevented them equalising, and therefore we were able to go on and complete the victory. But he doesn't seem to actually have the stamina, even now. And this is like his third season, I think, as a pro, which is slightly concerning, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I
I mean,
like
I
him,
assume.
but yeah, I like him, but yeah, he seems like he's an impact sub. He does, yeah, he doesn't look like he can last a whole game, so.
Assume it's an interesting one because at the start of the season, he really impressed. I certainly remember watching him away at Luton and thinking, this is a player who had a whole load of potential. And he's kind of gone off the boil, if I'm being honest. I think also with the system we're playing, Seton's, there's just a we've got better players. That's the point, right? In those places, which is a wonderful position to be in. You're looking at it and going like, we're pretty solid. There's not many places where we'd look at and go, well, where, obviously you could strengthen the whole team, but it feels like they're all it's a pretty solid team at the moment. There's not, if we'd looked at our first choice 11, I don't know where I'd necessarily be going. There's an obvious need to strengthen, maybe up front, perhaps. But don't know for the rest of you whether we're thinking, right, we've got a pretty good 11.
You've clearly forgotten all your rants through the winter about having a big lamp up front.
No, I still forget, but that's when because I think we were missing Stevens, weren't we? And I said, like I said earlier on, Brown is a new signing. Playing him up front in the role that he wasn't playing during that period has made a big difference. Being like now being convinced by that, I still want a big lump up front as an extra, as a proper option. Somebody who can hold the ball. Akinfenwa with pace is what I'd like.
That doesn't exist.
Well, of course not. No, it's a contradiction in terms. But I mean, it's interesting that Northampton were not particularly enamoured by someone like Eves, even though Eves has got double figures goals for them. But what is good now with the penalty, I think it's 7 out of 7 penalties now, maybe an 8 out of 8 that Matty Stevens has got. I don't think he's missed a penalty for us. Which, if you reflect back to the days when Ali was taking penalties, and even, dare I say, Omar against Burton Albion, I believe, this season, really couldn't take a penalty to save his life. But you're confident when Stephen steps up, and he's now into double figures as well, which is great. And I think, a lot of people were not sure for Stevens alongside a number of other players, would they be able to step up into League One? We talked about Oggsy, clearly has been able to do that. Obviously, Bishop was an unloaned quantity as a goalkeeper, and Stevens has stepped up. And yeah, reinventing Marcus Brown as a goal-scoring centre-forward, that based on those comments from Jackson, he really is, doesn't even necessarily believe he is himself, has been an absolute fillip for us. And it's probably set up a situation where, you know, who knows exactly what level he'll be playing at next year, whether or not he'll be able to play with us, even though obviously we still have him under contract.
So Bishop was just on, I was just going to say Bishop was on the bench for Saturday.
I was going to ask you guys about that. Bishop's back, having been injured. Apparently, it was an elbow situation. And we didn't have a sub keeper twice, and then he was back. But to be honest, McDonald's done nothing wrong. I think if I were McDonald, obviously I'm not a professional footballer, but if I was someone who had performed as McDonald had and made a couple of very sharp saves, he had no chance with the goal against Blackpool because it was a long ball from halfway when we weren't pressing, and Bauer literally just let the guy run past him and realised it was too late and he didn't have the pace to catch up with him, and it was a good lobbed finish. But other than that, I don't see that McDonald's done anything wrong whatsoever. Obviously, a penalty just got sent the wrong way. And to be fair to Jackson, when he's put people in and they've proved they're good enough, he's kept them in the team. So I suspect.
But this is a goalie, though. So he'll stay. It's a different thing, though, isn't it? Like, he's not. He wasn't our number one goalie. So clearly, Bishop is a better goalie.
With Bishop, right? Bishop, and we've talked about this before, dominates the area more than McDonald, and that gives a bit of confidence to a defensive back line. So yeah, McDonald's done nothing wrong and he's been okay. He's like a solid 6.5, 7 out of 10, right? But Bishop's a solid 7, 7.5. That's the difference. I don't think it's massive, but I've got a slight preference for having Bishop between the sticks than I do McDonald. Not, you know, it's marginal. And it's actually to be good in that situation where, you know, McDonald's come in and he's done a good enough job, which is great. But I don't think he's our number one.
The other reality is that just in terms of pace in League One, it just isn't there really, relatively speaking, in terms of the opponents we're coming up against. Some of the wingers for Bolton, the winger Cleary at Barnsley, and obviously most of Cardiff's front line are pretty quick. But apart from that, we're not playing any of those teams. We played those.
He only got away, by the way, dear listener, I'm mentioning Cardiff because Matt's not here. Otherwise, that wouldn't have been allowed to happen. Just putting it out there. Just on your behalf, Matt. Just so, so when you listen back, Matt, I want you to know that I took the baton and delivered it perfectly for you.
As our listeners will know, there are 24 teams in League One, so I actually have to mention them in terms of how much they play against us. That's all.
I did hear McDonald's
shaking his head vigorously.
Yeah, I did hear McDonald's.
I wasn't the only one shaking my head then.
No, I was shaking my head as well. I did hear McDonald's kicking is better than Bishop's, though. So that's the only thing I was always stressed about was Bishop's kicking. So maybe they can teach each other some stuff.
It was an interesting one. There was a bit of a sharp intake of breath when the ball was played into the area when McDonald made his debut the other day, and no one knew that he was actually playing against Northampton on the Sunday. I guess that would have been. But yeah. I don't think Bishop's kicking is particularly poor. I think it's a reality, a bit like it was with Sully back in the day, whereby you have a top-quality goalkeeper for their level, and they may not necessarily be quite so sharp in the clearance kicking as they are in every other facet of being a goalkeeper. And as a result of that, therefore, people may be concerned potentially a little bit about the kicking, but his clearance kicking is okay. I think he comes off this line relatively well. And to be fair, I think it's great because you've got people, you know, we talked a lot about Reeves and Smith and Maycock and the mix in midfield, but that's also showing the reason Nelson hasn't had much of an opportunity, for example, in midfield is because the midfield is performing well enough. So if it's the case now that Bishop actually is out of the team for a few games when he's fit, naturally, like every player, he's not going to be happy about it. But if he analyses it properly, and I'm sure Baeza does his proper analysis and gives support for all of the goalkeeping unit, then Bishop's going to be realistic and say, okay, unless and until McDonald makes any mistakes, and we hopefully will not see him make any mistake, but unless he until he does make those mistakes, then why should anyone get in the team? I just watched a little bit of the Football League highlights earlier on for the weekend, and there are enough examples in the Championship, let alone in League One, of first choice goalkeepers making mistakes. And as a result of that, we know we can't carry two top quality goalkeepers at the level we're at overall. Different clubs can, obviously, but we're not in that ballpark. And if we're going to have to make the investment in terms of better quality or better choice, I would rather make it in attacking midfield and or up front.
I guess there's no
I
info
do
on.
like.
I was going to say, I guess there's no info on when we think Bishop will be back. I don't know how long. I don't know what type of elbow injury he's got. How long they take to sort themselves out.
If he was on the bench, which he was for Stevenage, then I imagine, therefore, he's match fit.
Yeah,
Because
that's
they
what I
did
would have
go
thought as
for two
well.
games without him there available. So how much training he's been able to have, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I suppose that'll be the
And
thing. Is
obviously,
yeah, I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
I mean, I think a bit of refreshment would be good in terms of mixing the team up. And again, looking ahead a little bit, as we don't usually do, to tomorrow's game against Orient, we played Orient away at a random time when we couldn't buy a win, but they actually we managed to find an opposition in Orient on New Year's Day that were worse than we were. And even though we went 1-0 down again, we stormed right back and beat them 3-1 quite convincingly. And apparently on the day they were absolutely abysmal. Now they've got Ballard as they picked up from Southampton's reserves, who is one of the top scorers in League One. And I'd be very surprised if he stays with Orient or even stays in League One if he continues at that level, because he's definitely proved with a paucity of chances that he can actually finish off comfortably. As long as we don't give any chances, we should be okay in that particular regard. But Orient are now a little bit on the rise. Unlike everybody else in the bottom six or seven, with I guess ourselves as a notable big deception, Orient didn't change their manager. They got Richie Wellens, who's obviously got a lot of pedigree around League One, League Two. Has been down with Orient for a few seasons now. Last season they had a lot of low knees. They got to the playoff final against Charlton, lost narrowly to a 1-0 to Charlton in that final. And then, having lost all the low knees, they had been struggling all season, really. But it seems they've got some of their low knees back. I guess they're going to bring a full contingent down as well. It's been a few seasons. I believe I seem to remember a wonderful Harry Pell strike from distance last time we played Orient, which was quite a good night. So yeah, looking forward to that one as a local London derby.
The famous District Line Derby.
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out whether I can be there or not. I'm in London tomorrow anyway, but it's just again, it's just with the added on time, it just is a stress to get the last train. It's not the last, well, last week it wasn't the last train, it was just they changed to replacement buses, so I'm gonna have to think about it.
Dear listener, where would we
One
be
point, at
without
one
the
point,
travel
dear
updates?
listener, at one point, dear listener, I promise that we must do or organise somehow the live travel update that Adam posts, just so you can actually see it, because it is part of the uniqueness that makes the same old Wombles the same old Wombles. But you clearly you're not part of the WhatsApp group, dear listener, so you know, I feel that you're missing out, but it is a very important part of that, along with some other comments from another WhatsApp group that we all belong to, where a certain Mr. Drake does always post certain words every time we concede a goal. There are certain things that are just a given.
I've got a couple of little club kind of update things that I just wanted to throw in the mix. We'll all remember that back in the day, we used to play the first team squad in the London Senior Cup because the first team squad were obviously at that point Ryman League or even lower than that. And we got through, and I think I remember going to a London Senior Cup final against someone and losing a London Senior Cup final against Kingstonian, I think, of all people. Nowadays, however, we tend to send our under-18s there, which I think is really quite positive to be able to give them that type of engagement. So they got through against a couple of other lower level 7, level 8 teams. And they're actually playing tomorrow night, which shows exactly the level of team we're going to be able to play. Because they've got a game tomorrow night in the quarterfinals of the London Senior Cup against QPR's under-21s. The winners will be home to Cheshunt, and the winners of that team, that tie, will then play either Orient or Dulwich Hamlet in the final. So good luck to the under-18s because they are doing storming. They are well ahead of their level, and as I reported previously, they are actually top of both the different leagues they're in and in a couple of cup finals as well. So good luck to them, and I'll be fascinated to see out of that under-18 team, which I guess is the crop that that Junior and King has come out of. Who's going to make it through? Who are we going to offer professional contracts through at the end of the season? And how will they get on? Because obviously, in the last few years, Ogg has come through, Sass has come through, as we mentioned. And King obviously got a contract in the last season and is the one that's broken through into the first team this year. Although we still
We'd be
haven't
looking at
quite
Kai
worked out where
Jennings,
he's
wouldn't we?
playing. Kai Jennings is a couple of years ahead of Maxey. And obviously, Kai Jennings has been playing, Gateshead away with Sutton. And to be fair to Jennings and Foyo, and again, Foyo is not that old, both of them are doing well. They're holding down places in the Sutton team, scoring goals, setting up goals. And Sutton look, whispered quietly, but Sutton look like they could be relatively safe, which is great because that was going to mean that we'll have the opportunity to obviously give them the appropriate first team experience for the rest of the season. And do rather well there, and obviously then come back having played men's football with all these crazy away games at places like Truro and Gateshead on Tuesday night, and getting home at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and then graduating to the first team squad next year. So,
Exactly.
Adam, what is the one thing that you need to do apart from watching men's first team games before the end of the season?
Well, obviously you need to come to the We Are Wimbledon Fund quiz. So, yeah, just some updates on that. So, the We Are Wimbledon Fund current has hit like 25 grand on the totaliser, but actually for this season, the total is like 70 grand. So that's other money coming in. The 25 grand is a bit that's been ring-fenced for the first team. Money, so that's great. So that's
Where's
really
the rest of
cool.
it going then?
The rest of it goes to different things. So it's up to the club can choose what they want to do with that other with the other money. As far as I know, we've just made sure that the 25 grand that's been raised specifically for the first team is ring fenced. The rest of it, the club can spend on whatever they like. You know, penny chews, whatever they require, which is fine. So that's good. But obviously, the
Can
big.
you imagine 28 grand's worth of penny chews?
It'd be massive, wouldn't it? It'd be like a massive pile. But obviously,
Dear
the big.
listeners, some of us are old enough to remember halfpenny chews.
Yeah.
Halfpenny
Well,
blackjacks. Oh
I'm
my
there. Remember
days.
those? Yeah.
Just a quick aside,
Yeah, go
my
for it.
trip to Plough Lane, and my lunch on a match day at Plough Lane in the I guess mid to late 80s when I was going on my own because my sister had discovered boys and my dad thought I was old enough to go on my own, consisted of a super can of Coke, which is half a litre of Coke, and you couldn't get Diet Coke at the time, so it's half a litre of Coke, and going to the local shop and not just getting a super can of Coke, but then getting half a pound of wine gums. So the amount of sugar rush you're getting there to be able to then wander across Wimbledon as I did, and then wander down Hayden's Road to be able to get to the games was enormous,
That is a good
but
amount of
very,
sugar.
very enjoyable. And I still eat wine gums to this day, but not quite as many. Sorry, Adam.
No,
We are
it's
Wimbledon
fine.
Fund and fundraising night coming up.
So the big fundraising we had was obviously the quiz a little while back. So we're doing the quiz number two, which is this Sunday. So it's this Sunday at the Alexander Pub at 7 p.m. You do need to have a ticket to basically to participate, and it's teams of up to four. Again, Don's Trust board, no cheating. The tickets are £5 each, and I am advised that there are still tickets left to play, so that's cool. There's also a draw, there's also like a raffle as well that you can join. I'm not sure how you join that exactly, but that is also something you can join in advance. And
Go onto the website and buy tickets in advance
yeah,
based on
basically,
their
yeah.
social media stuff earlier.
Yeah, so it's all on the website, wearewimbledonfund.com. And at the moment, the prizes are pretty awesome, I have to admit. And again, there's more coming in. We've obviously got a signed home shirt. We've got a couple of hospitality tickets given to us from the club. Thank you very much. We've got a framed playoff print signed by Barry Fuller. We've also got a framed print signed by Robbie Earl, which is interesting, donated by Ray Armfield, which is amazing. And he's also donated a framed. Limited edition of 78 unbeaten print, so it's the list of all the 78 when we didn't lose for a long, long time. Also framed, so that's really cool. So yeah, and it says more to follow. I don't have any exclusives. I was just checking the WhatsApp group to see if I could give some exclusives, but yeah. So there's some really great fun things to win. I don't think I'm going to be there, but I keep toying with the idea of just trying to get
Oh,
them
you should
out.
do it. Come on, we need to get a team out
I know.
between us. And between all of us and appendages and friends and everything else, we should be able to just about
Have we bought any
raise a team.
ticket? Have we bought any tickets yet?
I don't think so.
Oh,
Mr.
sugar.
Keeper, are we going to drag you out, or have you got a better engagement?
Oh, it's always difficult for me getting across in the middle of the week because I've got
It's a
this week.
Sunday. That's not the middle of the week.
Sunday's hard.
Sunday's
Sunday's
hard.
very hard, actually.
Okay, well, I need to look at my schedule, but yeah, we need to sort this out. We need to. Hang on, I don't need to be there. I live way further away than you guys. You guys need to be there.
I live closer, and I can certainly be there. And I think my wife is happy to come as well. But two of us can't make a team, so.
No, okay. I will check my schedule and look at. It's just this, so the University of Southampton is running an AI arts festival, so I'm committed to a bunch of stuff that day, but it doesn't obviously run to the evening. Okay, I want to go because it was really. I mean, again, I'm just selling it. It was really good last time. It was absolutely
It was good
rammed,
fun. It was
and it
great
was
fun,
great
actually. Yeah, and
fun.
Sammy Mack was there, who was our guest a couple of weeks back as well. So
Yeah, and he's doing a
it
lot. I think
was
he's doing a live music round. I don't know how that's going to function
fantastic.
at all. Yeah, I don't know how that's going to
Well, that sounds cool.
So yeah, it's
That
pretty.
does sound
It should
cool.
be good.
Get yourself along, because obviously, 14 the Frog on social media, McDaw, the landlord, the Alex, will be the quiz master again. He's always good fun on that as well. If you've never done that type of pub quiz, his pub quiz is good fun anyway. And obviously, this is a football-related pub quiz, which will be much more amusing overall. Other quick news to bring you from around the club. I noticed that actually, I teed Adam up there to talk about AFC Women, and he completely fluffed his lines.
Oh, did I?
We managed,
Sorry.
however, the AFC Women's team, who are fluctuating in terms of their league performances, but they beat Brentford FC last weekend 4-3, and that booked themselves a spot in the Capital Cup final. So, as far as I can see, the Capital Cup is sort of similar to, at its own level, to the kind of Virtue Trophy type thing, in that it's not necessarily the top. Level of women's football with the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea and Man City and whatever else playing. But I know we've been in the semi-final before. We had a touring throwing game and managed to overcome Brentford 4-3. And the other half of the draw apparently is only in the quarter-final stages. So the other semi-final will be Tottenham under 21 or London Bees or Fulham. And the winners of all that then. The denouement of all that will be that they'll play
I'm guessing we
AFC
get some. I
Women.
mean, I know there's not as much money in the women's game, which is wrong, but I'm guessing we get some cash. Should we win those things?
Relative small amount, I would imagine, yes.
Yeah.
But I think, to be fair to the women's team, they are working and fighting hard. Kevin Foster and his team and his group are fighting hard to obviously preserve their league status. And if we can get other wins, that will, get the team spirit going even more, because there has been a relative churn on terms of the players there. Then so much the better, because if that helps us be able to maintain the league status, even better overall. I have to pick Mr. Niall Cooper up on how many games in a row have we won in the league right now?
At
Consecutively?
home,
At home?
I think was it is it 4, not 3?
Correct. It is 4, not 3. But here's another question for you. When did we last win 4 or more at home?
What? That's going to be ages ago, surely. Last
That's what I
season.
thought. Well, I thought it was even later than that, but it was last season, yes. Apparently, and I checked this out again, thanks to Tim Hansen, Paolo, my numbers on socials. He says, assuming league games only, we did 5 in a row at home twice last season. The first 5 home games of last season.
Of course,
And
yeah.
then from Gillingham onwards, Gillingham, that wonderful game with the totally undisputed Matt Stevens goal, up to Salford on the 15th of February. Was 5 in a row, so 10 games there. Now, 5 in a row again to achieve that would be fabulous. People have spoken about the kind of mythical benchmark of 50-plus points as being the one that we need to reach to be able to get somewhere in terms of
And
safety
we're still
within League
technically
One.
got a game in hand, haven't we, against a bunch of them?
It's not technical. We have got a game now.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
We haven't played Stockport at all, so we have to play Stockport twice, and therefore that is the scenario. I mean, quick question to both of you: are you still looking down, or are we still looking up with regards to the league table
I
right
tell
now?
you what, this just changes, right? Before Saturday, up.
Good
After
question.
Saturday, down. We're so mid-table, but that's where I'm at. So depends what happens. tomorrow night, or probably today for those who are listening when this goes out. Yeah, it's going to be
I'm just looking in the
either
middle.
way.
I'm like in the middle. Just stay there. Like,
Oh, no. I'm definitely either looking at I'm either looking at seventh place or fourth from bottom. Is
oh my
basically where I'm
word!
at.
What the heck? No, I'm just looking. I'm like, just stay where we just keep get the points in and do not fall down. I'm not really looking at other teams around us. It's like we've got to do our job. But the game in hand will help, I reckon. So.
It will, but it's Stockport, and Stockport obviously pushing up themselves. But I think, to be honest, there's going to be a time, and that time might come relatively quickly, when there are a number of teams that we still have to play that will end up with nothing to play for. So at the moment,
oh, right.
The likes of Plymouth in 10th, who have 53 points, are only 3 points behind Huddersfield, who are in the last playoff place.
Yes.
And likewise, Peterborough are a little bit further back, and Luton are only 2 points behind Plymouth.
Well, Luton
but
have
again,
been
with a few...
have been miffed because obviously they've got this whole new stadium stuff coming. They really need to push on. So I suspect they'll be getting a lot of pressure to try and get as many points as possible.
Well, they're getting a lot of pressure from the fans on the pitch because the fans don't expect them to be a League One mid-table team.
No,
well,
exactly.
When is that stadium ready, Niall? Do you know? You've got friends at Luton, haven't you?
But it's still going to be a couple of years off. I mean, it's not soon.
So at best, they're going to be in the Championship, possibly getting back to the
20,
Championship.
28, 29.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, Luton are only a couple of points ahead of us. And we have that game against Stockport in hand.
When does their parachute payments run out? Are they already run out, or is it this last season?
Next year.
Yeah. See, that's going to be tough if they don't figure it out before they run out of that money.
Well, they've had such a big turnover, as have a lot of teams, in terms of numbers of players they're actually had in their squad. And the expectation levels at a Luton, at a Plymouth, even at a Reading,
yeah.
who are still there or thereabouts, and we managed to beat twice, and frankly, I didn't think they were all that. Are still quite high. So I guess, you know, their wage bills are going to be pretty high. Scout around and have a look at the Wickham wage bill, which came out the other day, and the accounts, because that was quite eye-watering in terms of the amount of losses that they've managed as well.
Well, Reading could just do with investing in their train station because it's horrible. So
that's going to help them get big crowds. Is it? But
no,
what is interesting for
me
is I think in a couple of weeks' time, you know, the season relatively will be over for a Burton, for a Peterborough, for a Luton, and for a Plymouth. And by over,
That's
I mean
true.
They probably will be too far outside the relegation zone to be concerned about that, but also too far short of the playoffs to worry about that. And then we're going to play these teams.
But there's going to be, I mean, the thing with that stuff, though, is some of those players potentially will be trying to show off to and get themselves sold in the summer, maybe. So I don't know whether it will change their form.
How much are we going to be in that same boat, though, to be honest?
True.
This is true. I think the difference will be if you're at somewhere like a Luton or a Plymouth, then there's going to be that much more expectation from the home crowds. I mean, I went to Plymouth away this year. Great stadium, great home fans in terms of the support when the team are playing well. But otherwise, they're actually on the team's backs, and likewise at Luton as well. So I think they could, you know, struggle in that particular regard. Whereas we know that we probably only have, really speaking, about 15 or 16 players. I don't see that we're going to like be start throwing in some, like, I don't know, Amari Seeley or Harry Hedges, you know, two of those bright young things in the under-18s, into those last four or five games, necessarily. I think we'll push right through to the end because, obviously, as we know, a number of those players are out of contract. But if I'm looking at the table now, I'm looking at, you know, obviously the bottom four right now are Blackpool on 38, Rotherham 36, Northampton 35, Port Vale 28. And as I said earlier, if actually Blackpool, who've played a game more than Rotherham, are possibly doomed, likewise Northampton, likewise Port Vale, then it's probably one out of Rotherham, Wigan on 41, Leighton Orient 42, Exeter 42, Doncaster Burton 43. And we are 6 points clear of all those guys. So don't want to count any chickens whatsoever. Obviously, we need to be pretty solid in the next few games, Leighton, Orient and Peterborough, because then you've got, you know, over Easter, you've got Stockport twice and you've got Lincoln, who are there or thereabouts. And then hopefully, by the time we get to Stockport home, mid-April, you've got three home games to finish the season.
Yeah.
Stockport home, 14th of April, then Port Vale, Wigan away at the end of April, and then bank holiday weekend against Huddersfield. Those four games, hopefully, will be a bit of a
When's the bank holiday game then? What day is
walk
that?
on the beach. It's May the 2nd, which I'm guessing is a Monday. I could be
Sounds
wrong.
like it might be.
Not sure. Not sure.
I'll look it up. And how come Port Vale have played so many less games than everyone else?
Because they're still in the FA
They're in
Cup, my
the FA
friend. They're in the
Cup.
quarterfinals of
Oh,
the
yeah,
FA
of
Cup,
course.
in case you failed to notice that one. They've won, I think, as many games in the FA Cup, or possibly more games in the FA Cup than they have in the league.
Oh, yeah, no, so
But
2nd of
they are
May is a
still so
Saturday.
far behind, you know.
2nd of May is a Saturday, so it's a bit, yeah,
There you
Saturday
go. Okay,
afternoon.
it's still Saturday then.
Cool.
Sky being Sky, probably move all the games to half past 12 or something ridiculous,
Oh,
and
God.
expect
Yeah, of
Huddersfield
course they
Town
will.
fans to make it down to London by half past 12.
They'll probably make it 8:30 in the morning just to make sure.
They
Something
will
would
move
do
that game,
just
won't
like
they?
that.
They'll move them all to weird times, depending on what's happening with the playoffs, I guess. Ugh.
Well, I guess
They have to all kick off at the same time.
they do have to all kick off at the same time. That's fair enough in terms of no underhand scenarios and so on.
Oh, of course.
Which is totally what should happen in the rugby, by the way. That's a completely different point. That really pisses me off.
We're not talking about egg
You're very
chasing.
kind.
That's a different podcast.
Absolutely
It
right.
is.
One final thing I wanted to add. I did promise the listeners that I would throw in a bit of a statistical analysis I've been doing that I started a few weeks ago. Well, I basically was taking the whole season and dividing it up into four or five chunks of nine game blocks, and just seeing, analysing those nine game blocks, how we actually did, and whether or not we had a big slump, and when the big slump was, and how we recovered, and so on. So, if you take the start of the season through to the Doncaster game, 20th of September, we won five out of those nine games. Won five and drew zero. Actually, didn't draw any of those nine. We won five, lost four of the first nine. So that was a decent start, but we did lose almost half the games. The second block of games, up to and including the Exeter game, which we lost 1-0 to a header by a 5 foot 7 year 7 foot centre forward. We won three, lost four, and drew two. So again, starting to middle out overall. And then it was the third block of nine games, up to the Bolton game at the end of January, where Bolton scored obviously early on with that devastating break by Blackett Taylor. One win, five defeats, three draws. So that really was the nadir of the season. But just to show how much we picked it all up, in the last nine, won five, drawn three, lost one. And in fact, in the last 10, we drew a game just before that as well. So again, we've got roughly nine, 10 games left of the season. But if we were to even average out with, say, the second nine, where we won three and lost four, another three wins from now, another 9 points from now, that's going to be taking us into
58.
58 points plus a couple of draws. I think if anything approaching or just over 60 points is going to be an extremely impressive, positive, and to be applauded season, which will see us, I would have said, very comfortable in mid-table.
Yeah, but obviously we can get 30 points, so that's 79, and that puts us in the
Stop it.
Do you think, was it, I
playoffs.
mean, in terms of when that sort of uptick changed, was that related to any of our our formation changes, do you think?
I think you've got to say, right, that's probably coinciding with Stevens returning to the team and Tilly being signed.
It actually coincides with Callum Maycock scoring that late goal at Port Vale when we apparently were not very good. But to be fair, just checking out the program here in terms of who is in the team at the time, the Port Vale game was the 3rd of February. So Tilly was playing then. Tilly was playing right wing back. And actually, Nelson started at Port Vale. It's the first and probably only game he started, interestingly enough. And Brown started up front with Bugle. But that was the that was still while we were doing, the experiment with Nkeng playing left wing back, which is an experiment which I think finally after Cardiff we've realised that actually isn't very sensible to be able to replicate on a long term basis. The odd 10 minute here and 10 minute there at the end of the game isn't so bad if we're chasing things, but in simple terms, I don't think it was a formation change. I think it was just a legs change overall, with Smith coming into the team And again, it's great that we've got Smith under contract because he arguably has been as instrumental alongside Hepolyte and Maycock in that turn and change in the season.
Yeah. No, I like. I
Which
mean,
is
I
really
yeah.
positive.
I mean, there's loads of players I like, really. I mean, there's one I like the most, but.
And who knows, by the time this one goes out early on your Tuesday, so that you can listen to it, hopefully, on the way to the game against Leyton Orient, it will be Omar Brugel up front, inspiring us to a fifth home win. And of course, if that doesn't happen, then all rights reserved, no one organised and relating to the Omar Womalds can be held responsible for
Yeah.
what happens on the pitch.
Exactly.
Gentlemen, any other final thoughts for the week?
Just to say next week's Fair Game Conference be very exciting. So I might struggle to make the next call, but I will be able to update you the week after that with all the kind of shenanigans that goes on. We have Fair Game as a big financial report out on Thursday that is definitely going to be worthwhile keeping an eye on socials about. It's be very
And quite an
exciting.
impressive little video as well, if I'm allowed to flag that briefly without
We
saying
can impress that. That
whose
video will be
star we
live
are.
on Thursday. You've seen it.
I have seen
It's
it.
going to
It's
be
quite impressive. Yeah, with
splendid.
one or two well-known names, one or two former guests on the pod, and I would be expecting at the very least, Mr. Cooper, while you're obviously doing all your Fair Game stuff, for you to be able to get somebody else on from. I was thinking possibly we should get the guy from Sheffield Wednesday that we had at the beginning of the season back on again. Just to kind of reflect on how completely messy that still is. Because
Tony
I'd be
can do.
delighted to go to Hillsborough, but they still seem to be, as a club and as a support base, being absolutely shafted by the EFL. But that's for another day.
We can definitely look at getting some of those other people on. So I'll have a at the conference. I'll have a look about who I think's a good speaker, and we'll get them to have a nice rant. Probably could do something about the World Cup at some point as well, about how much of a sham that is. But that's a completely different podcast.
Yeah. No, I saw Chelsea got fined something, and then they also had a weird thing where they had a
Yeah.
huddle with the ref, which is really weird.
Just on that Chelsea, I've actually spoken to a couple of journalists today about that, who are in the football governance world, and they just think that is a farce.
Oh no, it looks like a farce.
Chelsea have got massively, massively let off the hook, considering the comparison with Everton, who did a much less amount of a misdemeanor. And Everton basically had a massive points deduction that almost had them relegated. I can tell you, getting relegated to the Premier League is worth significantly more than the 10 million fine that a multi-billionaire has just picked up at Chelsea. So, sorry, Chelsea, you totally dodged a bullet, and the Premier League bottled it.
Even the even-handed BBC website reports Chelsea made 36 separate payments totaling 47.5 million to 12 individuals or corporate entities made via a series of third parties primarily registered in the British Virgin
Oh,
Islands.
for goodness sake.
And there's redacted people in there as well. Offences over an 8-year period during which time they won two Premier Leagues, two FA Cups, one League Cup and the Europa League. And signed various people like, Eden Hazard and Willian and David Luiz and so on and so forth. And now they're trying to brush it under the carpet, saying
Old
that A,
regime.
they paid a 10 million pound fine, 10 million euro fine, but no points deductions at all. But as Niall says, they're still pending 74 other breaches of rules. And quite why it
74.
seems to take so long for the FA to be able to bring all these different things, I
Well,
got
because
no
the FA
idea.
are
The Man
useless,
City
that's why.
stuff is
It's the
still out,
Premier, it's
isn't
the
it?
Premier League. It's the Premier League right in
Oh,
this
yes,
one.
true. That's true. They're useless as well.
Right. So where I'm at with this is, in all honesty, bare minimum, they should be stripped of those trophies and relegated, in my personal opinion, to the Combined Counties League. That'd be about right, roughly.
Can you imagine the Chelsea Tractors meeting the Chelsea Tractors in the car park in Godalming that we had to do about, 20
Yeah,
plus years ago?
I think that'd be hilarious. Right,
That would be
anyway, that's obviously
absolutely
did not happen.
hilarious.
I am jesting, dear. If there's any Chelsea fans that potentially listen to this, I'm not saying that much of a relegation, but one or two divisions at least. Anyways, oh no, it works actually. You'd have to be relegated anyway. You'd have to be relegated
Delightful.
to the conference.
Yeah, that sounds
Would be lovely.
absolutely right. Poor the conference, really, but frankly, they deserve based on that type of financial shenanigans to be playing, Truro City and Gateshead away on a Tuesday night in the middle of winter. On that
Yeah.
lovely note, I would then conclude our podcast tonight by saying thank you very much to Dr. Aidan Proctor. And fingers crossed you can make it tomorrow with all your busy work and academic schedule. And thank you very much to Mr. Niall Cooper. Fingers crossed that our erstwhile host, Mr. Matthew Cooper, will be back in next week. But for now, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading to listen to the Same Old Wombles every week. We are the Same Old Wombles, and we're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known.